I mean, for me, this is an absolutely ridiculous.
Williams the other way. Into the rock.
Into Williams.
Fall so hard, Philly's in the building. Them sixes killed him. Chicago's 4-1 to boom, my dude, that's Lou Williams.
Fall so hard,
you say I'm crazy. And won't believe when I take you back to 83. When we won it all, I was just a baby.
Fall so hard, ain't it?
We be the infamous, you heard of us. Official
review.
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 Official.
Review.
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 Hey yo gang, it is the Upon Official Review podcast back in action. It is time for another NBA edition of the Upon Official Review podcast. Hard and hitting as always, like an Iggy dunk on Paul Pierce, coming at you with the ferociousness. It is me, Magnum, aka Ari, Ari aka Magnum, next to my homeboy Dan, the Rebel with the Snaz.
What up?
You know him. He's the NBA aficionado of Official Review.
Went to aficionado school. Thank you very much.
Exactly. That's for good years.
Absolutely. Well worth it. Well worth it to it. Thanks, Dad.
Absolutely. So yeah, we're gonna give you guys another full show of just hoops action. So stay tuned. Definitely follow us if you haven't on Twitter yet. Twitter.com/officialreview. You can also find Dan. Finally, we talked about it last podcast. We didn't have a handle. He's now found at Rebel with the Snaz. Check him out. And you can probably even search Official Review.
I have conformed. I have several tweets under my belt now.
You do. Mm-hmm. You're well on your way to becoming a Twitter black belt holder.
Couple of retweets. You know, it's interesting. You know, it's like you put yourself out there. And, you know, I always have these thoughts. And I'm like, everyone should know about this.
I agree. There's definitely part of Twitter is kind of, well, it is. It's almost all of it is self-serving. But I believe that people should hear your thoughts on the NBA as well.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I do. Well, and I always enjoy these podcasts. And I hope you guys out there listening do as well. So let's get into it. Let's talk some Sixers, Celtics. Obviously, we lead off with our hometown squad and our hometown series. We made it to Game 7.
Wow.
Yeah. We didn't really think that was possible, A. Actually, back when we did the first edition podcast, we were going to play the Bulls, and the Bulls had just lost Derrick Rose. And we thought, probably still lose to the Bulls without Derrick Rose.
Yes.
And then Joakim Noah went down, and we said, hey, well, we'll take it.
It was our year as far as, you know, fortunate events happening.
It's true.
That
everything
favored
kind
us
of,
in the first round.
It's true. Everything kind of bumped our way and bounced our way and found ourselves matching off against the Celtics, who pretty much made short work of the Hawks. What did they get in the series? Go to six?
Five or six,
yeah. But, you know, pretty much dispatched them without too much trouble. Neither of us really saw this. I didn't think the series would go seven. I definitely thought the Sixers could give them a shot, but the Celtics are one of those teams, one of those veteran teams that you just know turns it on when, you know, the pressure's on. And I thought, you know, they'll turn it up. And they've even had moments in this series where they look like, okay, we're going to play now. And then they look to be dominating.
Right.
And I'm afraid, I hope that doesn't happen in Game 7. I would love to see the Sixers win. But to even get here, to get to Game 7, is a testament to the heart of this team, to the coaching of Doug Collins.
Doug's been very good.
Yes.
I think Doc Rivers has been very good, too. I think this has been an interesting coaching matchup. And, you know, just to get back to what we were saying about the fortunate events, Celtics, not 100% either. And, you know, Ray Allen with bone spurs in the ankle. Avery Bradley, done for the year, most likely, with a shoulder injury, which is big for us because
that is
that real. You know, if we are going to have an advantage anywhere, it's not going to be on the inside. It's going to be with our guard play.
Yep.
And so Avery Bradley, being a good perimeter defender, can really help cut down on the penetration of Jrue Holiday and Evan Turner. He's not going to be there anymore, and we saw it a lot in Game 6 where They're going to attack that whoever Ray Allen is covering, and Evan Turner. They went, you know, it's in the third quarter of the last game. They went to him like three plays in a row, and he delivered.
Yep,
he delivered, and you know, it's been an interesting matchup. I think the Lavoie Allen Kevin Garnett matchup, which is kind of funny to even say,
right.
has been an intriguing one as well. And I love this series. I love how gritty and ugly it's been. I love the low scoring, the crazy defense. I don't think the national media feels the same way.
Nope.
I don't think the rest of NBA fans have the same kind of fervor that Philly fans do that about this Game 7 tomorrow night. But what can I say? I'm psyched to really, you know, come to a place where we limped into the playoffs in the 8 seed.
Yep.
Where a lot of fans, including myself, were saying, you know what, better just miss the playoffs. Better just miss them and you know, have a shot at a lottery pick. We did not think that we'd be here at the end of May with the Sixers still in it.
Yeah, having a shot at the Eastern Conference Finals.
Heading into it, yeah. One win away from the Eastern Conference Finals. It's incredible. Anything can happen in the playoffs.
It's true. It's true. The Sixers have strategically placed themselves somewhat by injury, like you just said, and other times just really great defensive intensity. They gave us flashes of that team that we saw during the 20-9 start.
Right.
Where, you know, scoring's coming from all the different places. I mean, in Game 6 that we won, we had five guys in double figures.
Typical Sixers stats.
Exactly. Yeah, nobody really kind of blowing the doors off. Drew had 20. Evan had 11, I want to say.
He had 12 and 9, something like that. You know, his shooting this series has just been terrible.
For the most part,
It's been terrible. You know,
he was 45% in the last game, but I think he's shooting 35% from the field.
He's been right around there. There have been a lot of articles written about how inefficient he's been, about how low his PER is in comparison to the other two guards.
Right.
And it is frustrating. It is, because we all want him to succeed. But just, man, it seems like he really just can't hit the broadside of a barn.
From a perspective of players that have really not shown up, Thaddeus Young has been really ineffectual, and just insofar as like a plus minus goes,
he's had one good game in this series, and it was in a loss.
Right.
We kind of thought that he would be sort of a non-factor in the Bulls series, just because there's a couple of players in the league that just normally the reason Thad can produce as well as he can is because he's a matchup problem.
Mm-hmm.
However, there are a couple of guys in the league, Taj Gibson being one of them,
that can just
neutralize him. Joel Anthony is another guy that comes to mind that for some reason, you know, they're just sort of skinnier, quick, athletic guys. They force him to go to his right. And he's been fairly non-existent in this series, and that's kind of disappointing, especially because we just gave him a fairly decent contract in the offseason.
Yeah, I mean, and insofar as offensively, he's one of those guys you count on. Him and Lou Williams go off the bench, they're instant offense for the most part.
Yeah.
Thad has got a couple go-to moves that he can usually get his shot off.
He's got one move.
Yeah.
He's got one move. You know, I mean, if he has the space and he gets it in his left hand, it's pretty consistent and has been throughout his entire career. He, interestingly, you know, he worked on that 12 to 15 foot jump shot in the offseason.
Right.
And it was pretty consistent during the regular season.
It has been, yeah. It was in the regular season. Right?
Has not been there for him in the playoffs at all.
Nope, not at all.
Really hasn't been there.
The other scary thing is he's been a turnover machine.
There's been a lot of sloppy
passes. A lot of bad, just sloppy passes. He's not comfortable.
And not securing rebounds either.
Mm-hmm.
He'll come down with it.
Right,
get
somebody
it
will pluck it
yeah.
out. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Boston is good at that too. Kind of creating extra possessions for themselves. But here again, you know, Game 7, we made it. Let's talk about this first. What's been the most surprising thing you've seen so far in this series? Maybe that even gives you hope to extend the series in the next round.
Well, I'd have to say the play of Drew Holiday. He's been, and if you look at the stats and you look at how he controls his offense now, it's interesting. You know, we were talking about this before about who steps up in the playoffs and how the playoff play can sort of, negate any bad regular season play. And he has just – and one of the biggest criticisms of Drew is that he's been settling for the long jumper all regular season long. Mm-hmm. When you know he has the speed, the athleticism
– is extremely quick.
And the agility to finish, to penetrate and kick to the open man. He's been a lot better about doing that. He's just been a lot more aggressive. And where there have been times in the regular season where I've felt like, especially when we were in our late season slide, where I really kind of lost my optimism about any of the players that we had being potential all-stars, potential building blocks on a championship team. And seeing Drew Holiday's blossoming play has really kind of given me some hope that we at least have him going forward.
Yeah.
I think his play and all, has been very, very good to see. And then also... I have to give it up to Andre Iguodala. He has gotten such criticism, and rightfully so, his entire career about not being clutch, not being a superstar, not being a number one offensive option. And it's just been really good to see him hit those free throws to close out that Chicago series. Yeah. I was really, really proud of him. I was really happy for him to see that. And he's also hit some big shots, too, big jumpers.
Doug even talked about that. You know, he thought it was apropos that Iguodala was able to close that series. He's the longest tenured Sixer.
Storybook finish.
It was cool.
Now, if he can only fix his damn free throws in this series.
Yeah, exactly. What is he shooting, like 11 for 25 or something absurd in the series?
For a small forward position, it's got to be near the bottom of the league right now.
It's really embarrassing.
Sixers as a team are shooting horribly. Horrible low percentage.
Yeah, it is. It's weird too because usually you think a lot of times in basketball you see players missing because you think it's like a lack of concentration or a lack of caring even. You know, but in the playoffs, you need those shots. You know, a close game,
especially in this series.
Yeah, exactly. Especially where baskets are at a premium.
Yeah,
and the Sixers are just missing.
And games are decided by less than 5 points.
Precisely. It was really frustrating to watch the night where we had 20 free throws in the first half and had 9 misses.
Yeah.
That's almost 50%.
Yeah.
That's points you leave off, off the board.
Yeah, fortunately we came away with a win, but, I mean, there are definitely going to be those nights and where we're not going to be able to come through with a late game offense, and those free throws, we're going to miss those free throws. Miss them, not actually miss the basket.
Yeah, right.
Miss them like
we could have used those
points. Yeah, like I miss my mom.
Yeah. Right, exactly. I agree with you insofar as players, I've always really liked Drew Holiday. The thing that, what I wish I could do is put Drew and Evan into one player. Because I feel like Evan is more confident than he should be.
Right.
And Drew isn't as confident as he should be. For example, when Drew hit that shot in Boston Garden and blew a kiss to the crowd, that made me smile because I said, okay, Drew, man, he turned his swag on a little bit. Like, he's willing to take that big shot because a lot of times you see him kind of deferring or not even looking for his shot. Or even looking to create, he's just kind of invisible.
Right.
And when you've got a player with that kind of talent, you want to see him, okay, I'm going to take this game over. And Drew's had his moments in this playoff series, which gives me hope for the future.
I think Drew also has just kind of like a nice attitude, and he doesn't want to – I mean, he's willing to take – with Lou Williams, we talk about going into boss mode.
Right.
You know, and taking ill-advised shots. And I think Drew doesn't want to do that. And I think Drew also recognizes that, hey, I'm still a third-year guard. I'm 21 years old, and I have Andre Iguodala and Elton Brand on my team. And I think he's just trying to be a little bit more respectful.
Right.
But I also think he doesn't have the mouth that Evan Turner has. I mean, we've seen it, and that's been a revealing thing about Turner that's come out this season. We've seen him jawing back and forth. Kevin Garnett, Kevin Durant. You know, I kind of like that.
Right.
Just because I like seeing the fire.
Absolutely.
But at the same time, I want to see it in the production as well.
Precisely.
So it's like he's talking a big game, but not always delivering.
Yep. Yeah, Evans had some moments too, but you're right. He needs to be a lot more consistent before I'll feel comfortable. He still goes into traffic with his head down. He finds himself kind of cornered, so to speak, and he gets his shot blocked or he gets a turnover.
A lot.
He gets his shot blocked a lot. He's not that athletic, and he creates space fairly well, but for guys that when he gets in the paint, it's just no space left.
But I feel like he, at least in this series, he had a good series in Chicago, and people were talking about the emergence of Evan
right.
Turner and Jrue Holiday. But this series, he's just been incredibly inefficient, and he can create the space. He's got the moves,
right?
But he's not hitting the shots. He gets his points, you know, like blowing by guys, hitting layups, hitting the floaters, and. Yeah, I feel like that's how he's more effective. And unfortunately, that's
right.
just not – you know, I talk about how Spencer Hawes bothers me because, oh, he's a good passing big man. But I would rather he be a good defensive, rebounding, shot-blocking big man. That's what you want from your bigs. From
right.
your guards, you want good shooting. Good passing and defense is nice too. But his strongest attribute is that his rebounding – which I'd almost rather give that to Spencer Hawes
right.
and give Spencer Hawes a shooting to Evan Turner.
Agreed. Agreed, yeah, you're right. Spencer Hawes is probably more effective and prolific from 18 feet
yeah.
than Evan Turner is right now.
I'll take Hawes in a game of horse over Turner any day.
Yeah, well, I mean, are we including trick shots? Layups? Jumpers, yes. All right, I'll give you
that. Yeah, no, behind the back, through the legs.
Right, exactly.
You know, Spencer always trip on his own feet doing right. that.
Absolutely, absolutely. But yeah, I'm looking forward to Game 7. I'm kind of mad at the NBA at the way they scheduled this, how it's kind of goofy, how the Celtics get an extra day of rest here.
Right, that almost seems to cater the old guys.
Absolutely, absolutely. I don't really get why the scheduling is so weird. But we'll see what happens, and we'll come back and we'll talk later. If Game 7 is, you know, the curtain call for the Sixers, who comes back? Whose last game is it in the Sixers uniform? We'll talk a little bit about that. Let's switch gears real quick. We'll talk Heat Pacers, and give me kind of your rundown of this series, what you saw, what you didn't see.
Well, I mean, the last thing that sticks out in my mind is that bludgeoning. In Game 5,
yeah,
with all the technicals and all the
flagrant fouls.
Yeah, the Psycho T, the Udonis Haslam stuff. It was interesting to see because when they started to Indiana went up 2-1, right? At one point.
They did.
Yeah.
They were up 2-1.
And so, you know, of course, now it's the Sixers and the Heat are polar opposites in that first of all, they're similar in the fact that they play like an up and down game, transition game, have a lot of athletes, play good defense, and they're pretty lethal in the open court. But the way that they're polar opposites is that the Sixers get absolutely zero media coverage whatsoever. Sixers get Sixers get absolutely zero media national media coverage at all, and the Heat are always on TV, always being talked about. And so when they get down 2-1 in a series, no one's going to be more scrutinized than them. So when the Heat get down in a best-of-seven-game series, everyone immediately starts magnifying everything. Yep. You know, Dwayne Wade and Eric Spoelstra got into a little shouting match. Yep. Clearly there's trouble in paradise.
Right.
If they lose this series, Spoelstra's done. Maybe Bosch is done, or maybe they trade Wade or so, you know, it's ridiculous the panic mode that ensues when this team gets down. But as everybody expected, Heat come back. The stars, Dwayne Wade and LeBron, throw in a couple of monstrous performances. 41-10 from Dwayne Wade last night.
Put their capes on. Yeah,
he was just hitting everything. All the little floaters and the and ones. It was incredible. I'm happy for the Pacers. I think they were, aside from the Sixers, kind of like the other feel-good story in the East this year.
Right, right.
And, a good season for them. And, I'm excited for them going forward. Roy Hibbert made his first all-star team. He's going into restricted free agency this
season. Is he? I didn't realize that.
Oh, yeah. So expect him to get a decent contract. And Paul George having a good season, raising a lot of eyebrows around the league, and they just have a lot of nice pieces going forward. And David West has been very good for them too. So, you know, I think well done for the Indiana Pacers, even though, according to Larry Bird, they played S-O-F-T.
Yeah, he spelled it for some bizarre reason.
Yeah. That was kind of funny. That's kind of funny. And I wonder how that makes you feel as a player to hear your, you know, the owner of the team you play on call your entire team soft, have that. I mean, I'm sure Larry Bird, when he said it, didn't plan on it getting the kind of coverage that it did.
Yeah. He doesn't really know how to censor himself, I don't think, though. He's really old school.
Yeah.
Like, he's probably...
Did I say Larry Brown, by the way?
I think you said Larry.
Yeah, Larry Bird.
One of the things about Larry Bird, again, you know, talking about how old school he is, he's very prideful, and, you know, he's the general manager. He built that team. So he's saying, you know... I put this team. Who put this thing together, huh? Me. That's who. And when the players that he drafted, when he brought them in, he thought they were mentally tough. He thought they were physically people that you could turn the pressure up and they would produce. And they kind of shrunk a little bit, or they kind of let the heat get into their heads insofar as how they approached the game. Maybe got a little bit out of, you know, let's produce, rather, and then they said, maybe we're in their heads, and they tried to kind of play a psychological game with them. We're going to foul you hard, and we're going to, and yeah, he worked just too much for him. It's funny, too, because I think Wade, you know, has done his thing insofar as taking a back seat a lot this season, and I think we kind of forgot how good he was.
Yeah. Well, I think also Dwayne Wade is getting to that point in his career, like we were talking about the Celtics, how they might take some games off, take some plays off, but then they turn it on.
Yep.
They turn it on when it matters. And I think Dwayne Wade, who's 30 years old now, I think he's kind of taking that same approach to kind of preserve his, you know, preserve his body and maybe, you know, be a little bit less aggressive. But, you know, he knows now that it's the playoffs and this is the time. And 41 points on 17 of 25 shooting, you can't.
Yeah, you can't play much better than that.
Can't play much better than that.
I mean, the thing about Wade when he was the Finals MVP with the Heat 4 years ago, he was doing things that were Jordan-esque, where, you know, you actually mentioned Jordan-esque, you know, like Kobe-ish. You know, he was the only other guy that, I guess maybe early Vince Carter, but other than that, you don't mention Jordan. You don't say so. You don't compare somebody to Jordan. And Wade has those moments where athletically he'll dominate. And then he'll just, you know, fallaways and three-pointers, and he just shows off the whole repertoire, and there's, you just have to hope he misses.
And it's funny because remember how when last season when the Heat started off 9-8 and people started saying, oh, maybe it's not going to work.
Right.
I mean, again, they get the intense media scrutiny. But, you know, maybe there aren't enough shots to go around. Maybe they can't play together. And I think it has taken an extra season, but I think Wade and LeBron really know how to play each other. And I think their games complement each other, too, because Wade, scorer, one of the best in the league. LeBron, yeah, he can score. He can score just as well as anybody, but I think his facilitation game, his vision, it goes very well with Wade's scoring ability.
Yep, I would agree.
And to see them on the fast break,
it's a thing of beauty.
Nothing
it
like
really
it in the
is.
League.
There really
There's
is.
Nothing like it.
No, to have two guys that athletic, you literally see things that you've never seen before.
Full court alley-oops.
Yeah, exactly. Full court alley-oops.
It's insane.
One hand falling out of bound, catches and passes in the same motion. They'll have plays where both of them will jump, and they'll throw an alley-oop in the middle of a dunk so the other guy can dunk. Just like NBA Jam.
Yeah,
like
video game basketball.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
These guys can do it. The Pacers... I think where they fell short a little bit was I thought Darren Collison looked really good, and he didn't get enough court time. In my opinion, he looked very effective when he was out there on the floor. One of the ways to beat the Heat is to have very good penetration, and just your point guard is very effectual. But George Hill looked average or below average with Mario Chalmers, but Collison really lit him up when he was on the floor. I was really surprised to see that Indiana's coach didn't make more adjustments to get him on the court more. Honestly, I thought that was a lack of judgment and coaching by him. I think that might have made it a little more competitive. But that was a fun series. I enjoyed watching that. The Pacers are definitely, they're not going anywhere. I thought it was interesting. Somebody posted that, and I never even thought of this, but Larry Bird has been like Rookie of the Year, MVP, Finals MVP, All-Star MVP, Coach of the Year, and Executive of the Year. Like some ridiculous trophy case. Like, who's ever going to do that? Nobody.
Yeah, and that's also, I remember thinking it was interesting when Larry won Executive of the Year, because I feel like you don't see that from players, from former players,
right,
all that often. And you know, and it makes me think about Jordan and the Bobcats.
Yeah, how bad they are. Yep.
Jordan is not getting any votes for Executive of the Year. I'll tell you that much. No, not that it's necessarily his fault. I mean,
he's probably getting the Razzie if there is a such thing. Yeah.
I mean, it's tough. Certainly with an expansion team, and true. You know, maybe he bribes David Stern a little bit and figures out a way to get Anthony Davis in the lottery this year. Although
they need to do something. I'll tell you that.
Yeah. Yeah, not looking good for the Charlotte Bobcats franchise. I'll say that much.
So let's real quick. Let's talk about Eastern Conference Finals. I don't think there needs to be that much discussion on it. The Heat are talent wise and kind of what we've seen so far look like the best team, and generally in the NBA the best team wins. Generally, you do have upsets now and again, but it's not like football or even baseball, where a team can get hot, you know, pitchers can get hot, or even a hockey, the goalie can get hot. In basketball, it's a 7-game series, the best team usually wins. And the Heat look like the best team, even without Bosch. Could be back. I guess they're projecting him to be back possibly in the middle of the Eastern Conference
Finals. Is that what the latest projections
are? Yeah, that's what I've heard. That's what I heard today, actually. So if Bosch comes back, definitely the head and shoulders front runners in the East. If the Sixers get there, how many games do they take them? If the Celtics get there, how many games do they take them?
Well, I mean, you can just look no further than the regular season records. You know, the Heat just own the Sixers matchup.
The Sixers are 1-11.
Yeah, 12 right.
Games.
So if the Sixers win tomorrow, I'll say, you know, I think they get one. I think they get one,
yeah.
And so that'll be Heat in five. If the Celtics win, no Chris Bosh for the first couple games, I'll say then six games. Right. No more than six, maybe even five, mm-hmm. But I'll go with six.
Yeah. The Heat have their work cut out for them in the finals. So I think it would behoove them, and they're going to know, we need to get healthy as possible before we play OKC or San Antonio. So they're going to know, I would think, let's try to make short work of whoever we play. Let's rest up. Let's get Bosch completely healthy. Let's get Wade completely healthy. Whoever else they need to, you know, heal to get from getting dinged up in the playoffs, they want to do that because they're going to have their hands full with whoever comes out of the Western Conference. So I think, yeah, the max six games for the Celtics likely, and probably five games for the Sixers. The Sixers clamp down one night, Heat have an off-shooting night. One of those nights where they're less aggressive taking the ball to the hoop. When they look aggressive, they're just, man, they are tough. And also when their role players are hitting their jumpers, which they've been off and on too. But the other night, as we saw in game five with the Pacers, Dwayne Wade just said, forget about the role players, I'll just do all the scoring myself. And I guess LeBron and Wade actually outscored the Pacers in the second half of Game 5 and in the first half of Game 6, I believe. It was some staggering number, like 105 to 100 or something like that. Ridiculous.
I mean, those two guys can get you 70.
Oh, yeah.
Every night.
Every night, they could.
It's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we both agree. We'll likely see the Heat in the finals. And hopefully we'll have a good final showdown. Hopefully we'll get an NBA finals where they go six or seven games. That'd be cool. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We will talk Western Conference. We know a little bit less about them, but we will do it for you. And I actually did watch almost all of the Lakers and Thunder series. We'll talk about that a little bit. And, you know, we'll give you guys all the rest of the NBA action to look for. This is the Upon Official Review podcast.
The last word in Philly sports, y'all. Yeah,
that is us, you guys. Don't go anywhere.
The love for the game, tears the passion, driving through the lane, no fear, we attacking. Come on Philadelphia, we ready for action. Leave your heart on the court, believe it, we scrapping. Meeks banging threes with his hustle on D, grabbing big boy boards, Tony Petit. We're building up steam and we're splitting it deep. Come on Sixer fans, yeah, you gotta believe it. We do it for a reason, all through the season. Do it for the team, cause the team keeps us breathing. Amped and focused, we're full of emotion. Bombarding, taking charges, I know that you know this. Moving on strong, new town, avoid Allen. Juice pass it with the pass and attacking the glass in. Solid play from bench, Sam Young and Brackens. Philly, get up.
Welcome back, gang. It is the Upon Official Review podcast. Doing our thing on the podcast front. You know how we do. Bringing it to you. Let's talk some Western Conference. We will talk the series that probably was the one that the NBA wanted you to watch, which was the Lakers and the Thunder. The Lakers, obviously, kind of the Dallas Cowboys of the NBA. The New York Yankees, so to speak. That series was really good, I thought, but it could have been better. I actually talked about this briefly on the last podcast. You guys can also download from uponofficialreview.com. Check it out on iTunes. Talked about how the Lakers' front court just looked disinterested at times in the series, and Kobe hates that. Oh, man. Kobe is so competitive, and to watch Andrew Bynum go out and have four rebound nights and Gasol have, you know, 8-point nights and things like that, it was hard to watch. I would have thought that they would have had a little more poise. Maybe, you know, you can say that's coaching or what, but the Thunder showed a lot of poise for a really young team because they won two of those games in the final last few minutes.
Yeah, when they were coming from behind.
Exactly, exactly. Lakers looked like they had it wrapped up. And, of course, you know, since the Lakers are like the Yankees and the Cowboys and such, there's a lot of front-running fans all over the country that have never even been to L.A. or they don't own anything that's purple or gold, but they, you know, they're Lakers bandwagon jumpers. They're Laker fans. And because of the magic of Twitter, you get to see exactly what they're saying. And I remember seeing, oh, Lakers Nation, we got this locked up. Da 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 da. They can't stop us. Lakers going to the finals. And last 2 minutes of the game, Durant comes up big. Harden hits a shot. Westbrook hits a shot. So much firepower on OKC. I really like the way that team's built. Dispatch them in six.
They've been great.
Dispatch them in five.
Five games.
Yeah.
Five games.
Didn't even go six.
The gentleman sweep. It's been
I don't think I've ever heard it called that.
No, I stole that from Basketball Jones.
That's good stuff.
Yeah. But, you know, James Harden really coming up big. You know.
Fear the beard.
Fear the beard. I mean, he's almost kind of like their closer. I mean, obviously Durant is, but the ball is in Harden's hand at the end of games. I mean,
That's true.
He is a great playmaker. You know, he can penetrate and he can finish through all kinds of contact.
Yeah.
He's been great to watch. And you're right about them having the poise that they haven't shown, but it's the kind of thing that experience brings, and you know, they're used to being in these late game situations now. They know how to win.
Yep.
It's been great to see. And I personally love seeing the Lakers have an early playoff exit.
Oh yeah.
And you know, and just on a personal note, to be sitting here the end of May and to still be talking about the Sixers and what's going to happen to them.
Yep.
While the Lakers aren't all gone fishing, to quote Charles Barkley, it just feels good.
It does. I agree. It's nice to watch, you know, the bullies on the block get taken down a notch. Especially, too, you have to think that not even the the casual fan, after seeing that Ron Artest elbow get replayed 1,000 times, and we talked about it on the last podcast, after watching that, you got to be happy to see the Thunder beat them and get a little bit of revenge in that way. You know, Harden takes it to, you know, you injure me, give me a concussion. Well, guess what? I'm going to drop 30 on you. I don't know if he went for 30 in the series, but just looked unstoppable at times.
Absolutely. And you know, and you were talking about Kobe and the disinterest from the you know, the occasional disinterest from Bynum and Gasol. And, you know, it was funny to see Kobe when Meta World Peace, Ron World Peace, whatever you want to call him.
I hate calling him Meta World Peace. I hate it.
You know, I never met a world peace I didn't like. Kobe said in an interview that, well, at least something like he's the only guy I can depend on, or I know I can depend on him. And yep. so that definitely kind of rubs the front court players.
I would say
so. Long way.
I would say so.
But you know, Bynum has been kind of talked about as being an enigma. And I don't know if he just needs a coach that can get him to focus. I think that's just what...
I think you're right.
I think he just needs the right coach to get him to focus, because he's got all the talent in the world. And I'm very interested to see the kind of roster shakeup that will ensue. I have already started reading about Pau Gasol for Andre Iguodala rumors. So we'll see. We'll see how that shakes out.
It's true, yeah. I definitely am interested to see what they're going to do. Because, you know, they're going to give Kobe free reign to kind of mold and shape the team, because he's only got a few years left. I mean, ideally, you know, at the top of his game. He's 34 now, right? Or close to 34. So...
What do you think is more important to Kobe Bryant right now? The... sixth championship ring to tie Jordan, or the all-time scoring record?
Or the records.
The all-time scoring record to tie Kareem. I think I saw he has to average, if he averages 25 points a game for four more seasons, he can get the record. All-time scorer.
I think,
And just
that's a good question.
Yeah, and because a big knock on Kobe this season has been, Kobe, you're shooting under 40%. You're jacking up over 30 shots a game.
At least 30 shots a game.
And Andrew Bynum and Pau Gasol, can be really dialed in.
Yep.
Be having incredibly efficient nights, and he's not deferring to them enough. So what do you think is more important to him, winning or scoring?
You know what? I think at this point in his career, as much as you would hope this wouldn't be the case, he may be more of an individual guy. I mean, you definitely... Obviously, he's top three players in the league, right? At the very minimum, but you're right. He becomes a black hole at times when you're not sure if that's the best thing for the team. Boss mode, Lou Williams mode, where there's no such thing as a bad shot, and he's just jacking up shots. And he makes shots that nobody else can make. Let's be honest. You know, maybe Wade, but he'll just make shots with a hand in his face, falling away from 20 feet. You're just like, why would you shoot that? And it goes in. But you're right. There are times when you feel like he would be better off deferring to other players, and maybe it would be just a show of confidence. Actually, if you look up, if you Google NBA memes, M-E-M-E-S, if you Google that, there's a specific meme about how Kobe never passes and, like, doesn't know what a teammate is. It's pretty funny. So yeah, it will be interesting to see what the Lakers do insofar as coaching, insofar as trades for players. We'll see what happens. I'm glad to see that Chris Paul didn't end up on his team, because they might have been, you know, they might have just tore through the Western Conference. But we'll see what happens with them going forward. I'm looking forward to seeing the Thunder, man. I love Kevin Durant's game. I'm glad to see that. I remember earlier in the season people were talking about how if Westbrook and Durant could coexist. Remember that?
Yep. Westbrook's taking too many shots.
Because he takes a lot of shots. He's not a true point guard.
Yeah.
Does he want to play second fiddle? All
he's
of those.
He's got a chip on his
things.
Shoulder.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Although I will say, from watching Westbrook, he has been great.
He has been great.
His mid-range jumper has been as consistent and solid as, and it's pretty much unguardable too, because he's so quick. He finds the space. He gets in there. He gets near the elbow.
And he elevates.
And he just elevates, and it just looks. It looks like it's going to go in every time.
Just about.
Every time. Yeah, and you know, Ibaka having a great year, named to first team all defense.
Somehow. Yeah, we'll talk about that a little bit too. This
I guess getting all I guess defensive. If you just get weak side shot blocks, then that gets you in first team all defense.
I guess so. The funny thing is, talking about the Thunder, with I think I might have mentioned this in the last podcast, the NBA talking heads, most of whom I can't stand, they're getting actually almost consistently worse.
Well, like Hubie Brown? No, I like that. I like what I'm seeing from Russell.
It's actually a pretty good Hubie Brown, but I'm talking
That's
about like
says.
Yeah, he does say that all of
whatever,
the time.
Whatever.
If it was a drinking game, you'd be hammered.
Yeah, Drew Holiday scores. Oh, I like that. I like what I'm seeing out of Drew Holiday now. You see what he did there? I like that.
You're right.
It's so funny. I could do that.
Yeah, you really could. You really could. Anybody could. We're talking about like the TNT guys, the ESPN guys. They're just getting, I don't know, obviously they're paid to be opinionated, so they have to say something that sounds like, oh, I agree with that or I disagree with that. But sometimes they just make really dumb statements, and I'm just like, a casual fan notices these things. How do you not notice these things? On top of the fact that they butcher the English language consistently. Magic Johnson and Chris Broussard are at war with the alphabet, and Charles Barkley.
Oh, what about Kenny Smith? Pau Gasol.
Exactly.
Pau Gasol.
Well, Charles Barkley says, Russell Westbrook.
Andy Samberglar.
Andy Samberglar. Exactly. That ad cracks me up. Because, yeah, that's what Shaq is. He's horrible to watch on TV. I wish he was the Orlando Magic general manager. So
I could not believe when I saw that.
They're going to offer.
Yeah,
they're going to have
really,
an interview for that.
You're going to put Shaq in charge of a team? I mean, I don't know. It's like, you know, how can you assume that their, you know, their basketball acumen is going to translate into a front office position or a commentating position?
I agree. It does not always work. Absolutely not. But they were talking about how the Thunder weren't going to be able to, you know, beat the Lakers or advance in the Western Conference because too many jump shoots, too much jump shooting. They apparently failed to notice that not only, you know, they have three legitimate scorers. So if somebody has an off night, another guy can step into that. On top of that, they play very solid defense. This team is not just an offensive run up and down the court and shoot 100 jump shots. They play really good defense.
They're not just a fun team to watch anymore.
Exactly.
They're an actual great
this
team.
This isn't your father's. This isn't your grandfather's. Oklahoma City Thunder.
This is a championship caliber team.
Yeah, it really is. They can beat you a lot of different ways. They create when they're not shooting well, they get to the line, which is what a good, smart team does. And they play just enough interior defense with Perkins and Ibaka that they don't really do a lot for you offensively, but they play good, solid defense. They're not gonna shut down Gasol and Bynum when they're having good nights, but they play enough.
I think if they're missing one thing, it's that second scorer off the bench. Just that second guy other than James Harden. I mean, they have, like, Daquan Cook and knock down some shots.
Down again.
Yeah, but I mean, they really need, you know, that just that other guy maybe off the front line who can come in and give him some offense.
Royale Ivy, man, come on.
Royale Ivy.
Isn't he there? I want to say he's – isn't he there?
Yeah, he's a like third he's, guard off the bench.
Yeah, he's
there.
Way deep on the bench.
Yeah.
Where he belongs.
Yeah, Royale with cheese. Royale with Thunder.
But yeah, I'm looking forward to watching them play the Spurs. Speaking of the Spurs, let's move on. Let's talk about the Spurs and Clippers real quick. I don't know, outside of L.A. or San Antonio, who watched all four games of the series. I knew it wasn't going to be that much of a series, unfortunately, from the jump. Both me and you thought the Grizzlies were going to win the first
round.
Yeah,
I picked the Grizz. I had the Grizz.
You picked the Grizz going to
the
Western Conference Finals. And I didn't really disagree with that, but I definitely thought that they could beat the Clippers. They were banged up. Clippers are even banged up. Clippers had some clutch play from their bench, actually. Had some really good shooting, but the Spurs are just too much.
I was like Nick Young. You know.
Me too. I like Nick Young too.
But maybe it's because he was always phenomenal against the Sixers.
Against the Sixers.
Yeah. He would always have his best games of the year against the
That's
Sixers.
That's true. He did. But, I like the Clippers. I like what they're doing. Blake Griffin needs to learn how to play defense. He is a sieve on defense. I might even touch on this before. Spurs offense is deep. They come at you in waves. And fundamentally, they just don't get any better. If you're looking at...
It's big, call big it, fundamentally.
Exactly, exactly. If you want to watch how basketball is supposed to be played, and
who wants that?
Exactly. Who wants
that's
that?
That's why I don't watch the Spurs.
It is. It's kind of boring. It is. You know, you're going to be watching 15-foot bank shots and pick and rolls and pick and pops all game. You're not going to get really many highlight plays, or Ginobili will go behind the back now and again.
Tony Parker is great to watch, too.
Yeah, and Tony Parker, he's just an assassin. That's what he is. When you watch him play, you're just like, how is he doing this?
Yeah.
Because he doesn't look particularly faster than anybody or, you know, quick or... I mean, he's quick, but not any more quick than a Drew Holiday or, you know, or Chris Paul, but he always gets his shot off.
Interesting little factoid about Tony Parker. He and I share the exact birthday, date, and year. And I just turned 30, and most of you probably don't know that, but you did know that Tony Parker did turn 30.
And you both...
I got her first. I got her first. I got her at her peak. And I said, you know, all right, fine. You want to go date some professional basketball player?
Well, she
from
wanted
France?
To move to L.A. and do her old movie career thing.
You know, I wasn't that desperate for that housewife.
Yeah. Well, I think you made the right move, honestly.
Well, you know, Tony apparently opted for infidelity with John Barry's wife.
John Barry's wife. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe John Barry's wife knows something we don't, clearly. But, yeah, Spurs, Clippers.
Good segue.
Made short work of.
The sweep.
The other thing, yeah, the not even the gentleman's sweep, just a regular, plain, you know, get out the broom. Popovich, you got to give him his props. Who's coaching the Olympic? Just a little quick side note here. Who's coaching the Olympic basketball team this year? Is Krzyzewski still? I think Pop should get a chance to coach it at some point, man. He's awesome.
I don't think he wants to.
He probably not. He probably wants to sit at home in his little rocking chair.
He's kind of. Yeah, he kind of reminds me of my dad.
To Sinatra. Yeah.
How he's kind of like crotchety and curmudgeon-y, and he doesn't like the. You know, he seems like he probably loves basketball more than anything in the world.
Yeah.
But he seems like he hates it.
Right.
You know, like, oh, I have a, you know, the world's greatest job. But my life sucks.
Right,
you
right.
Know?
Yeah. These guys never listen to me when I tell them to set a screen at 18 feet. They never do it right. Yeah, I could see that. I could definitely see that. So, real quick then, who is your – based on the way the Spurs are playing now and based on what you just saw from the Thunder, what's this series – how's this series break down to you?
This is actually – this is a difficult call for me.
It is. Me too.
And I think it's and it's a really good matchup. It's kind of – you know, you have the youth and athleticism and fire of the Oklahoma City Thunder and then just kind of like the poise and experience and just, you know, incredible strategic play of the Spurs.
The grace.
I think a lot of people are picking the Spurs you know, just because they, of the experience factor and just
they haven't lost
since
April 11th.
You know, yeah, they haven't lost. Yikes. You know, and so it's kind of because they haven't lost in the playoffs. It's kind of hard to imagine them losing four games. And you know, that's pretty staggering. But I think I still am going to go with my original pick, which is the Oklahoma City Thunder. I think
my pick as well.
I think it actually – now, I think the Spurs, since they were the number one seed, will have home court advantage.
Yes. Yeah, Thunder are the number two seed. Correct.
But I think it'll actually – I think seven. I will pick OKC in seven.
My inclination is to go right along with you. Spurs are playing really well. Thunder are just a really tough matchup, and and they're going to play – I feel like they give you a consistent effort for the most part, night after night. The bigs are going to bring it on defense. Westbrook is a tough matchup. Durant's almost an impossible matchup. And Harden – even though Harden's game doesn't look necessarily flashy or – kind of like the Spurs, kind of like a Ginobili. Very similar, you know, and they're both come off the bench. They're comparable in that fashion, other than the fact that James Harden's beard weighs 30 pounds, you know.
They have like a you know those guys on the court with the sweat mop.
Yeah.
You know, they just have that guy follow James Harden around, you know, getting the sweat off of his beard. And the, James Harden, he's gonna like wait till Tony Parker slips and, you know, tears his ACL. Let me wring this out a little bit on the floor. Here. Exactly. James Harden doesn't look like he's that super athletic, but he actually is.
He's
deceptively athletic.
He is. He really is.
So, he plays kind of like but really he doesn't. It's kind of weird.
Precisely.
He can still throw it down hard.
Yeah, absolutely. Harden, earlier this year, they showed you Taco Bell had a commercial with Brian Wilson, who has that crazy beard with the Giants pitcher.
Yeah.
Why didn't they just give that sponsorship immediately to James Harden? Hello, you're clearly like an elite athlete with a huge beard. Hello, he's right here.
Well, I don't think he when were those commissials? Last year?
Yeah, maybe last year.
Because I think he's always had the beard ever since he came into the league.
Right, but then they won the World Series.
And then I think also the beard has gotten gnarlier and gnarlier as the season has gone on. I don't think he's shaved it. I don't think he's done any type of grooming at all.
Birds in there.
Yeah. You know, your sixth man of the year, ZZ Top.
Right. That's probably true. Yeah. Probably true. He probably keeps the trophy in the beard.
Yeah.
Hey, you guys want to see my trophy? There you go. It's probably true.
It's a good hiding place.
It is.
You know no women are going to find that.
So we both got the Thunder in seven. It'll be exciting. Western Conference Finals. It's going to be great. Insofar as games you must-see TV, that's probably one I can point to. I'm trying to think of the last. I can't even think of the last one I've been as kind of watching, ready to watch a heavyweight kind of slugfest every night. I'll definitely be watching all of that series. And we'll definitely come back and we'll do an NBA Finals podcast. Let's take a brother break. We'll come back. We'll talk about the Sixers and see, talk about whose last game is it in a Sixers uniform. Talk about what steps this team needs to take in the offseason. We'll do a tweet of the week. Normally I only do tweet of the week in the other podcast, but I have a fantastic one that I want to highlight. Then we'll give some shout-outs and get out of here. So you guys stick around. This is the Upon Official Review podcast.
It is the last word in Philly sports.
That is who we are. You guys stick around. It's the Upon Official Review podcast. You know how we do. It is your boy Magnum and your boy Dan, Mr. Freeze.
Picky, picky.
The rebel with the schnoz.
Sorry.
Mr. Freezeberg. Doing our NBA thing, as always. Mr. Freeze, let's talk about whose last game it is here in Philadelphia. Who are we going to be waving goodbye to, either happily or unhappily, once we close the doors, once we close the books on the passionate, intense, and proud 2012.
Wow.
Who's out of here?
Well, let's just say we don't know if the Game 7 in Boston will be the last.
We don't
game.
Know.
We don't know.
That's true.
Anything could happen.
What if we win the... No.
Why, if we go to the Eastern Conference Finals?
And then LeBron gets hurt, and we... Well, we'd probably get swept by the Spurs.
I have personally contracted Tonya Harding.
Jeff Galooly in the gang.
To go after LeBron if
why?
If we make it. Yes, why?
Why me?
Yes. Yeah.
I appreciate that. I'll throw in a little bit in my fund.
All right.
The
good.
LeBron's knee fund.
I could use the help. You know, the one thing that I think a lot of Sixer fans wanted was that we didn't want the new ownership group to kind of get like a false sense of security that and be at that place where we're like, oh, we're just one piece away, you know. And you really have to look at this objectively. I mean, we would not have gotten past Chicago if Derrick Rose was there, if Joe Cano was there.
True. Let's be honest,
okay? Boston is a favorable matchup for us, and they're also battling some injuries of their own. So, and who knows what the outcome of the series is even going to be.
Correct.
So you still have to look at this team very objectively. We're still a very flawed roster, zero interior defense, terrible rebounding.
Horrible rebounding.
Offense very hard to come by at times. So, you know, well, let's look at the big contracts first. Okay, you have Andre Iguodala and Elton Brand. Andre Iguodala, been on the trade block a long time, been rumored to be. Elton Brand, been talked about with the new amnesty clause. Because Elton Brand is going to be in the last year of his contract,
right?
I don't think they use the amnesty clause on him.
Really?
I don't think they do, unless they have a clear-cut idea of who his replacement's going to be.
Right.
So I think they might still continue to save that. I do think that ownership will finally make a bold move and trade on Andre Iguodala. As great as he has been in the playoffs.
Well, stock's high.
His stock
sell high, right?
Will never be higher than it is right now.
Yep.
It will never be higher.
First time All-Star.
Hit those clutch free throws to close us out in Chicago.
Outside shot's gotten better.
Free throws, no. Three-point shot, yes. He is a better three-point shooter than he is a free throw shooter.
How is that possible?
But, in previous times when his contract has been somewhat untradeable, he only has 2 years left now. It's a lot more manageable, and he's 28 years old, still in his prime. His stock will never be higher. I think now is the time to sell. You have to sell now.
I agree.
So I do think that we won't see Andre Iguodala in a Sixers uniform anymore. I believe Lou Williams will opt out and enter free agency.
He's out of here. Yep.
And good for Lou. Lou seems like he's a really likable guy. He takes some ill-advised shots sometimes, but he also hits some big ones. And I wish him all the success in the world. I do not want him. I would much rather see those end of game big shot ISO plays go to either Jrue Holiday or Evan Turner in the future.
Real quick side note, because we're talking about Lou Williams. Yeah. If Lou Williams goes somewhere else, you think he'll ever be an All-Star? Is that possible?
I don't think so. Just because I don't think so. I mean, he's been in the league what, 5-6 years now?
Since he was 18, he's 23 now, I think.
He might even be I've watched Lou Williams his entire career, and I've never really felt like I've seen that much growth or development in his game. And I think he'll never be a great defensive player, and I think that'll probably always prevent him from.
Yeah, he is terrible on the perimeter.
Yeah, he's just too slight of frame.
Yeah.
You know. But I think his
he wants to be Allen Iverson. He plays passing lanes well, and he steals the ball, but he's a terrible one-on-one defender.
Right, he can't play on the ball.
No, not at all.
Every once in a while he'll block like a 7-footer shot, which is always kind of cool. I think his role will always be as a six-man instant offense off the bench, and he'll have a very successful career, you know?
Right.
Because of that. And then lastly, Spencer Hawes. Also going to be a free agent.
See ya, Spence.
Goodbye. Goodbye. Good riddance.
Happy trails.
Good riddance.
Don't die of dysentery.
You know, it's been... I've hated having him as our starting center. I've made no secret about that.
LaVoy Allen.
LaVoy, I think... I don't know if...
Center defense.
I don't know if he's going to start. I don't know if he's going to play the five either. I mean, he might be better suited to play power forward.
Possibly.
But, yeah, I mean, well, actually, and LaVoy's going to be a free agent too. So I think
how was he a free agent?
I think because he was a second round pick, so it was a non guaranteed contract.
But it's only a year?
Something like that. I think.
Nah, it can't be. I thought there were a minimum three.
You might be right. I could be wrong about that. I thought I remembered reading that we're going to have to.
LaVoy Allen's got to stay. Pay the man.
Yeah, pay that man.
Exactly.
And then you know. Depending on what kind of deal on what player we're looking at with an Andre Iguodala trade, I mean, anybody is really up for grabs. Depending on how big the player is, Like, let's just say for the sake of argument that the Lakers would be willing to part with Andrew Bynum, with Andre Iguodala being the main piece, but then also wanting either one of the three, Jrue Holiday, Evan Turner, or Thaddeus Young. I'm just, you know, this is a total hypothetical. You know what I mean?
Right, okay.
I just feel like we might have to part with one of those guys to get a big-time player back.
Could be right.
Because I don't...
Do you want Andrew Bynum?
I'd want to do some due diligence regarding his health, because I read that he's interested in getting the orthokine knee surgery that Kobe had over the in the off season for
that, the German,
yeah,
quote unquote, the German knee,
yeah,
surgery.
The German knee surgery. And so I would just want to know, well, why do you need that? What's up with that? And it's kind of like the things we were talking about earlier about his attitude, but I will say that I think, you know, there aren't many good centers in the league right now. He's, you know, I think everyone would agree that he's your second best center in the league behind Dwight Howard.
Yeah, that's pretty
he's
much.
He's only 24 years old.
Yep, still a young guy.
So, you know, if you can get him back and pair him with a Jrue Holiday, I'd be
happy with that.
You know, I think
I would be, at least as a jumping off point to a new sort of direction. I mean, it's Drew still on the cusp. Drew to me has all-star potential. Drew's still young, and Andrew Bynum is an all-star. Andre Iguodala to me is not an all-star.
Well, he was this year.
He was this year, but there haven't been that many other all-stars that I would rank him above. I mean, like, so far as the worst all-stars to ever make an all-star team, he's on that list to me. Like, Tyrone Hill made it 1 year. I think Dana Barros made it 1 year. B.J. Armstrong made it 1 year with a horrible stat line just because he was Jordan's teammate and the team was doing so well. But Iggy's not – he's in traditional sense, he's not somebody you can just give the ball and be like, hey, Andre, take the game
I still
over.
Think he deserved it this year, and I think and we are definitely...
You're just saying that because you saw him on Walnut Street.
You were the one who recognized him. I just saw guy on stilts. But, you know, I mean, Luol Deng made the All-Star team this year, which he shouldn't have. You know, and he made the All-Defensive team, and Andre Iguodala did not, which is ridiculous. But
sidebar. Let's go ahead and take that sidebar now.
All right, sidebar.
The defensive first team, second team selections came
they
out.
They have to fix this.
It's absurd.
It
it's a joke.
It is.
Because the defensive player of the
Tyson
year
Chandler
didn't make the first team all defensive team. What in the world?
Yeah, I mean, shouldn't, if you're the defensive player of the year, shouldn't you then
automatically
whatever your position is, in this case center, shouldn't that automatically sort of go into that
be
spot?
The first team, yeah. Come on
It
now.
Seems very hypocritical.
Yeah, it's really weird because, what is it, the writers vote on one and then the coaches vote on the
yes.
other, right?
Coaches vote on the defensive team.
And the writers vote on the actual
player
of the year.
Yes.
Yeah, it's they need to have some sort of synergy at some point with these, you know, these votes and these, because it's really insane. Also, how in the world is Iguodala not on the first or second team?
Yeah, he gets, I think he had the most.
Is there a third team anymore?
There's a third All-NBA team, but not a third All-Defensive team.
Gotcha. Who's on the All-NBA team? It's Kobe,
it's Chris Paul,
LeBron, Chris Paul.
Chris Paul, Dwight Howard.
Dwight Howard.
Was the center.
Who's the four?
Four is, it's not Kevin Love because he's on second team.
Okay.
I don't know if it was Dirk.
Interesting.
I think Durant is your small. Or
yeah.
No, I think it's. No, I think your forwards are LeBron and Durant.
And Durant.
And I think.
And Kobe and Chris Paul
Kobe
are the other
Chris
ones.
Kobe and Chris Paul.
That makes sense.
And Dwight Howard.
That makes sense.
Team.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting. But yeah, they definitely have got to fix that voting, fix it somehow, and make it actually accurate.
I think, you know what I think they should do? I think they should prevent coach. You can't, as a coach, you cannot vote for a player on your own team.
That needs to happen, true.
Because I think DeMarcus Cousins got a vote in some, you know, in some, or, oh no, that's right. Carlos Boozer got a vote for defensive.
What?
Yeah.
Wild. No, that doesn't belong.
I know. I'm pretty sure that voter was on drugs.
It was Tom Thibodeau.
Yeah, I don't know.
All right, so back off of our sidebar. So we're looking at a Sixers team next year. What's the starting five then in your dream scenario?
Dream scenario. All right.
I mean, it's your dream scenario, but it's based grounded in reality.
I will temper it back. And I think if they make an Andre Iguodala trade, I like Utah as a trade partner for us because they need size on the perimeter. We need size on the interior. I would love to get Derek Favors from them, but I think they're pretty much.
They're pretty sold on.
Yeah, I think they're going to make him untouchable. So I think Enes Kanter is going to be the main piece that comes back, and I think
I haven't seen a lot of him.
He actually, I don't think he's played a whole lot of minutes just because they're so stacked in the front court.
Right.
But he was he was third pick in the draft.
I remember he was a
skilled
high
center,
pick.
Tough guy. I haven't seen him play too much. I don't know how high I am on him, but I think just looking around the league at teams that would be interested in Iguodala.
Doesn't he take Gordon Hayward's spot?
They
play the same position?
Well, you can play Gordon Hayward at the two or Iggy at the two.
You could. Yeah, true. Except for the fact that Iggy can't really shoot. I mean, he's an average shooter. Yeah, he's not really what you want your two guard to be.
I guess
maybe you put Gordon Hayward at the two.
Another possible trade partner I like is Minnesota.
Okay.
And Derek Williams. I like this piece coming back. So we still don't really address our front court, but we kind of get Iguodala's replacement, and then we have a nice young group of Holiday, Turner, and Derek Williams.
Who's very athletic as well.
Yeah. So those are just a couple of names that I'll throw out there. I think.
All right, so 1 through 5.
All right, Drew and Evan are your 1 and 2. Uh-huh. I think Elton Brand is still your power forward.
Ouch.
Yeah, like it or not, I think he still is. If we do not address the center position in the offseason, I think maybe Lavoie gets the start. Assuming, if he does need to be re-signed, he is. And then small forward, if we get Derek Williams from Minnesota, I say he starts at small forward. Otherwise, if we make a Minnesota trade or a Utah trade, I wouldn't be surprised if we got some player back like Rajah Bell or something like that. And then we could play like Rajah Bell at the 2, Turner at the 3, or vice versa, or something like that. I actually think that we would take a step back next year by making that trade, but I still think it needs to be done.
Right. Well, I mean, the sort of the general rule, at least for the last few years, has been you have to be bad before you're good. Yep. And the Sixers haven't been bad.
Just to bottom out.
Just been, yeah, exactly. We've been mediocre to above average. This season we just barely missed getting the lottery. We just barely got into the playoffs. And we're here and we're doing what we can while we're here. And it would be cool, if the Sixers made the Eastern Conference Finals or somehow miraculously made the finals. But we know this team's not built to contend for a title every year. We're lucky to get out of the first round. So I wouldn't mind at all if this team took a step back next year.
And focused on player development versus wins.
Right, exactly. I mean, and honestly, everybody wants to sell tickets, but I think that this city would get behind a team that they knew was going somewhere and had a plan in place rather than just kind of throwing out a team we know is going to win 38 to 42 games a year, to 45 games a year. Okay, that's why when we talked about this too, in the last podcast, fans can get ambivalent and they can just kind of be, there's other options for me. There's other places where I can spend my money, especially in a metropolis. It's different. I actually think I talked about this on Twitter with somebody, how we were talking about how in towns where there's nothing else to do, there's nowhere else for me to spend my money and there aren't any kind of like social events, there aren't, plays and movies and shows and
nightlife.
Nightlife, exactly. Clubs and bars and restaurants I can go to. I'm going to go to a game just because there's nothing else for me to do. I'm in St. Louis, and it's right next to where I work, and I'll just walk over to a baseball game, or I'll walk over to a hockey game. But Philadelphia, you have to make a concerted effort to go down to the stadiums and spend your hard-earned money on a team that, you know, is okay. And we're a good college basketball town, too. Guess what? College basketball teams are good. College basketball arena is always rocking, for the most part, because the students are probably drunk, let's be honest. But, you know, they have nothing else to do. They're having fun. And teams here, you know, fans here are smart. They're going to know, hey, this team isn't built to go anywhere. Let's take a step back. Let's build this team to make noise in the postseason rather than just kind of be happy we got there. So that's kind of my feeling about it. That sound something like you?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, the fans here, I mean, we're excited for this postseason because, hey, we haven't made it to the second round since 2003, but we know the drill. I mean, it's been fool's gold, this whole thing.
Yep. I mean, we love our team, and that's not to say we don't support our Sixers, but, you know, let's be honest. Again, it isn't like football where if you get to the playoffs, anything can happen. We know what's going to happen. We know if we play the Heat, Evan Turner's not going to score 30 points. And
because nobody scores 30 points.
Right, yeah, Sixers. Yeah, exactly. But, it's, you know, but in football, that can happen. You know, a quarterback could just have a berserk game like Tim Tebow at 316 yards passing against the Steelers, and they beat the Steelers. Nobody saw that coming, but it can happen in football. It doesn't happen in basketball. But, yeah, let's go ahead and get ready to sign off. You guys have had a good hour of hoops talk. I think your brains are satisfied at this point.
I know mine is.
So I'm going to do a tweet of the week just because I thought this tweet was fantastic.
La, don't wait till I get my Twitter right. La, then you can't tweet me nothing right. Excuse me, did you tweet something? You can't tweet me nothing.
It's by at AP Gelston. So I'm assuming AP is Associated Press, which is good to know that Associated Press is employing some funny, talented people here. At least he was for this one tweet. He tweeted, and I didn't even realize that Tyronn Lue is an assistant coach in the Celtics.
Yeah.
But yeah, in game five, or game six, Allen Iverson came, and I thought it was a good PR move by the Sixers owners. They're pretty smart PR-wise. Yeah. But they brought Allen Iverson there. Crowd went nuts. He did his whole signature Hulk Hogan move. He put his hand behind his ear. Really cool. But the Dan is his name, Dan Gelston, good name, tweeted, Celtics assistant Tyronn Lue keeps looking over his shoulders, worried AI might step over him. Which I thought was tremendous, because as a Philadelphian, that shot is all ingrained in every Sixers fan's mind where AI steps over. Matter of fact, show on Sports Nation, with Colin Cowherd, who's a complete numbskull, which is neither here nor there, but they did a top 100 disrespectful plays in basketball. Yeah. Did you see this?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, I think number 2 or number 3 was Iverson stepping over Tyronn Lue. It was amazing.
And I was in the building for Game 6 the other night. It was amazing, and it was really touching to see Iverson come out and just. The reception he got was incredible, and they were showing montages of Iverson all night on the jump.
That's
the Jumbotron.
Cool.
They showed that play a bunch of times. It was great.
Cool. Very cool. Good move by the Sixers owners and everything like that. That was smart. I'm gonna give us some shout outs.
Shout out to everybody in the hood. Hey. Shout out to everybody smoking that good. Cool. Shout out to everybody in the club. Hey. Everybody getting live.
I'll ask you, though, Dan, do you have anybody in particular you want to shout out, whether or not they have a Twitter? Anybody you want to say what's up to online or whatever?
You know, I just want to say, I want to thank my other Philly bloggers, Liberty Ballers and Depressed Fan Brian Ward.
Definitely check them out.
They're great, and they are passionate, and they're very, very thorough when it comes to updating on Sixer news. So I will say that. And just, as I've been doing this this Twitter thing, it's kind of like a new thing for me. It's just cool to see all the people that are out there that are passionate about Philly sports and that kind of, you know, want to talk about it, want their opinions heard. And, I'm just happy to be a part of that community.
Awesome. Good stuff, sir. I'm going to give a shout-out to my boy at Philly Fans Voice. That's Jeff. Definitely check him out. He does a podcast along with some other guys. They're kind of like these fans that are sort of from Philly, but they're in the D.C. area, so they cover all those teams. Check him out at Philly Fans Voice on Twitter. Also, at Displaced Fan. Fan is spelled with a P-H, which makes it known that he is their Philadelphians. He's a great Philadelphia sports fan that's not in Philadelphia, which is you see a lot of it, actually. And also at Citizens Bankers, at Funner Here. Obviously, the Funner is a reference to the Roy Halladay. It's just going to get funner, which is Philadelphia lore. And that's about it. There's a whole bunch of other people that are awesome. Pretty much everybody we follow, you should follow. Also, let me shout out my boy at Main Event TV _ AKA. He has a YouTube channel and a pretty dope Twitter that covers sports, and he also does talk some video game stuff, but he's very knowledgeable on his Philly sports. That's it for my shout-outs. It's been fun doing another podcast with my boy Dan. You guys, I hope you enjoy it, and definitely keep in touch and stay tuned. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/officialreview, facebook.com/officialreview, and uponofficialreview.com. We will see you guys next time. Peace.
Later.
At the farmer's market with my so-called girlfriend, she hands me her cell phone, says it's my dad. Man, this ain't my dad. This is a cell phone. I threw it on the ground. What, you think I'm stupid? I'm not a part of your system.